You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 20th, 2023. And have you seen the leaks? I'm considering buying Nintendo.
Podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
And this is a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. We are back. Man. I was in Canada for a week, the Great White North. You know, there's a whole fucking province. Everyone speaks French. A whole province where everyone speaks French. It's very strange.
What a magical kingdom up there.
That's truly amazing. Also, we've both been hit by sickness. So we've been gone for a couple of weeks. Apologies to our listeners, but man. When it rains, it pours, you know? I think that both you and I are still sick.
Oh, yeah.
To some degree. So,
it's a good thing. I mean, my throat is working, but my eyes, disgusting, truly disgusting.
Yeah, I'm just generally disgusting. That's just my state of being these days. So if you hear any sniffles or anything, just, you know, be warned.
That's the gremlins.
It is the plague days. Man, you cannot go... 48 hours in 2023 and not miss some big game release, some big game news. There's just so much going on. We've missed a bunch. We've been playing a handful of games. We've been choosing not to play a handful of games that we want to play. The State of Play came out. There's some Microsoft leaks. So I think today we're just going to play fast-paced catch-up. Yes. So we're going to talk a little bit about games, the ones that we've been playing, the ones that we've not been playing. And then we'll go into briefly State of Play because I want to talk about a couple of things out of that. And then we'll talk about the Microsoft leak, which is big. So grab bag, rapid fire.
Yes.
Why don't I start first with games I've been playing? I finished Dave the Diver. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Hold your applause.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I saw credits to that game because I put in such a time commitment, and to the fucking bitter end, they are adding mechanics. Game is so absolutely wild. Absurd. Easy contender for gamiest game of the year. Also one of the best, most charming games of the year. So I really enjoyed that. So just reminder to folks, if you have not checked out Dave the Diver, we did a little debrief on it a while back ago. Check that out. I am deeper into Baldur's Gate 3. Still a great game. Holy cow. Long, long time commitment.
Are you continuing the same quest or have you restarted or did
no,
a new
same
game
quest,
plus or
same
anything?
Quest. Yeah, okay. Same quest. But I'm deeper in. Like in Act 2, things mature. The characters change. Your decisions have like bigger impacts. It's a treat, man. Like it is really fun to see a world so well realized. That is so responsive to your decisions. So I'm going to keep playing. I want to check in. I'm sure we'll talk about it at the end of the year when we get to some of the best games of the year.
Yeah.
Because it's on my list right now. I played a little bit of Starfield. I think that this game runs like absolute ass on my PC. I think the failure to optimize has been pretty rough for me personally. To be fair, I have an older computer, but this is the first time I have felt to the age of my computer attempting to run Starfield. So that's
Do you
been
think it's, is there something that you could do to like, is, you know, is there some wild lighting effect or something that is causing it to crush or is it just
I tried moving some things around, like maybe, but I mean, I have so little time as it is and I'm so tired as a new dad again that I'm just playing Baldur's Gate 3 instead. Also, to be honest, the first hour is fucking boring. Like, holy crap. Like it just, it does the classic Bethesda thing. Having to watch someone walk unimaginably slow drives me insane. I'm a fast walker in real life. You know, and there are times when I'm walking with someone that's just like, okay, I have to like intentionally slow myself down. I've never seen anyone walk as slow as the NPCs that you must follow at their pace in Starfield. It's a fucking tragedy. It's a gear grinder.
Oh, man. To put it in the end of watch your context. Watch out, Starfield.
So, okay, more stuff. Lies of P, gotta play that. There's another game that I downloaded that I'm very excited to play called Chance of Sinnar. Have you heard about this?
Chants of Sonara. What? I don't even know what kind of game that is.
This is an indie game that is about translating forgotten languages and like languages of other people that you encounter. Almost like Tower of Babel kind of scenario. Really cool looking, really clever design. I have not started it, but want to check that out. So even amongst the indie space, it's not all even big titles. There's a lot of the new ones, but holy cow, that game looks really cool. Lies of P is out. I want to play that really badly.
I mean, I've heard fairly positive things. Like, I've heard very, like, kind of in a good way, this game is a good one of these. So it's kind of cool to see.
And when like, you say these, you mean Bloodborne.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, a good Souls-like subgenre game.
Okay, so speaking of Souls-like, segue to games that we've actually played, and you have played in particular. Armored Core. So I have played just through the first boss before I had to go on my trip and I was being distracted by Baldur's Gate 3. You played a little bit more.
Yes.
Want to get your thoughts. What do you think about Armored Core thus far? Armored Core 6.
Yeah. Armored Core 6. I played a few more bosses, basically. And I'm really glad we're talking about it now because I could tell Hannah was getting really bored of me talking about it to her while I was like playing it on the couch because I was just like, I'm kind of flabbergasted that this game exists. Mm-hmm. And I admire it too because it's just you can see the From Software design ethos, but it's certainly not a Souls game. But there are things in it that are very similar where... I even messed with the controls. So I flipped around the controls to make the dodge the circle button or the B button on Xbox.
I should do that. Yeah.
And then I made the, you know how you could like turn on the boost jets of your mech so you can just like move faster basically. Like I mapped that to the click in on the left stick. So it's more like a run, you know?
Yeah. Makes sense.
And so I was like, hey, it's just, I'm like, okay, so there was this company, right? And they used to make these weird mech games. And they also made a couple weird, like, medieval combat games. And they almost went out of business. But then they struck it big with Dark Souls. And now they like, looped all the way back around to, like, their previous heritage or whatever. And which those games influenced Dark Souls. And now I can totally see the latter-day Dark Souls stuff influencing this. So I was just, I was just kind of delighted by this game, just the existence of this game. But then also, I think this game is really fucking good.
Oh, God. Now you're pushing me to play it even sooner.
But I will say, caveat, it's really good. I don't know how much I'll play of it because it just demands a lot of investment.
I mean, I think it's obvious even in the first session, right?
Yes.
And it's not even just the classic Dark Souls commitment, which is there, right? Like, when you face that first boss... Like, it's not going to hold your fucking hand, right? Like,
no.
You must learn to be aggressive. You must learn to use your environment to keep yourself safe. These are lessons that we know from other Souls games, but the physics of controlling your mech is different.
Yes.
You know, like, especially the verticality of it, like, constantly trying
to three-dimensionality. Exactly.
And having to think in that way, using that Dark Souls contest, is not easy. And I speak as someone who has platinumed Bloodborne and played Dark Souls 3 like many, many, many times. Challenge runs, all that stuff. Like this will force you to learn in that same classic way.
Yeah.
And that's to say nothing of how complex it is to actually customize your mech. Like I think that to me is so staggering of like, your wheels change, your rocket launchers change, your shoulders button change, your boost changes, the armor that you have on your mech changes, and the speed changes. Like,
the cooldown on your energy, like all of that stuff you can mess with.
It makes the idea of like a Bloodborne weapon having two forms ludicrous. You know, like the idea that, oh, because it's complicated enough thinking about how Bloodborne has movesets when you transition weapons, right?
Yeah.
Like this is... just another ballpark. So
I
have that same feeling, and that's one of the reasons why I stopped, because I was finding myself really only able to play late at night when I was already pretty tired, and I'm like, I don't think I can play the way you want me to play until I, you know, go on paternity leave part two or whatever.
Right. I think we're kind of on the same page there, because there's even later, you know, some of the later levels that I've been playing, they keep introducing things too, where, you know, they introduce the concept of like, well, maybe you don't want the sword. Maybe you want to dual wield guns and like an energy gun and a ballistic gun, or, you know, you want to have a different type of rocket launcher that has a, you know, a different charge up or a different amount of ordnance that flies out when you shoot it or whatever. Like, they just keep going with like the different options, and you could really have like, it's funny, one of the tool tips that they that I saw as I was like loading into a mission or something, it just explicitly said, you know, if you find yourself failing against the same boss over and over again, it's probably a function of your loadout. Like, they just explicitly said that, which
can
I thought
you
was
imagine? It just feels so alien, like in another game to be like, are you losing to the boss? Fucking change your gear.
Yeah,
this this isn't like, oh, explore your builds, like play anything, you know?
Yeah. And so you, at a certain point, you know, you have, oh, this is the armored core that has more of a tank-like build, and this is the one that is super aerial, and this is the one that has the melee. You know, you have to have these like separate builds of all of your armored cores. So like, it's just a lot. Like, there's just a lot in this game, and it moves like a platinum game. You know, it moves like it has the movement style of like a Bayonetta or Vanquish or something, with
and almost
the intricacy of a From Software, you know?
Yeah, and almost like a bullet hell aesthetic. Like, a lot is going on screen. Things that don't even matter. Like, little guys will shoot machine guns at you that just sort of bounce off your mech. But it's still screen clutter, you know?
It is.
The other thing that I found really challenging, actually, that I'm curious to feel like if it ever becomes second nature, but is the sheer amount of things on your UI. Because you are tracking the ammunition on all of your weapons, the reload charmer, charger, your own shield break, which is kind of like an overheating mechanism, as well as the shield break of all of your enemies and the automatic targeting of your missile launchers. Like, there's just a lot on the screen, and most of it is relevant. Like, it's not just chaff that you can ignore because, you know,
it's not there just to look pretty. There is a mechanical significance to it.
And so one of the things that I was finding so challenging in those early parts is none of it was second nature to me when looking at that UI. And coming from Elden Ring or Bloodborne, where there's a lot of complicated systems, but they disappear when you're actually playing.
Yeah.
That's not the case in Armored Core. Did you find that it became comfortable?
I think you start to understand, because there's some types of weapons that only ever go in some slots of the mech. And so I then was able to think to myself, oh, okay, so this outer ring is always going to be my shoulder stuff.
Yeah.
And this inner ring is always going to be the gun, and this other one's going to be the knife. And so you still have to pay attention to it, but it becomes a little bit less, for me, it became less overwhelming a little more ways in, because I realized that there is a lot, but it's at least consistent. Like, it's not like I'm ever going to put a rocket launcher on my right hand. It's always going to be on a shoulder.
Who would put a rocket launcher on their right hand? Yeah, sure. Okay. That makes sense.
But it's still very easy to forget some of that stuff. Like, I forget what it's called, but the super boost, where it's just like the dash and you're just kind of like Naruto running towards something, like when you're clicking the stick, you know? I forget that you can attack during that sequence. Like, you can shoot and use your sword during a dash to like end the dash or to shoot towards an enemy as you're dashing.
Well, and it's important mechanically, because when you do it, also dashing uses your energy.
Yeah.
But if you initiate an attack, it sort of takes a chunk of that, but stops the sort of constant use of it.
Exactly.
So there is a kind of like when am I going to stop and do this attack momentum?
Yeah. I don't want to like burn it all and then have nothing and just be using my regular gun. Like, there's a lot of things.
I also
think
you do more guard break damage or shield damage when you initiate out of that boost mode.
There's that whole thing too, where it's like, okay, I staggered this enemy. Now I can focus on the other one and then loop back to the enemy as they're still staggered to finish them off. There's just a lot of there's juggling of enemies when you're doing that stuff. And the subsequent bosses that I played, they're in a very From style game. They're teaching you things, where this boss is going to teach you how to jump over enemies. You know, like this boss has a charge, and the test that you're trying to pass is, can you jump up, look down, fire, land, and keep going, and kind of keep that all in your head as you're doing it? Whereas the first boss was, can you deal with aerial combat? Like, you have to be able to deal with aerial combat or looking up. And then a subsequent boss is, now can you deal with ground combat where you have to be in the air? And so it's just like this very like elegant From Software style approach to skill checks, and I love it. It's great. I actually think it's a very good game, but then it is so demanding that I just don't know if I'm up for the task.
What I will say that makes me happy is this is exactly what I thought it was going to be, right?
Yeah.
Which is enticing but also inaccessible. And yes. I think a lot of Elden Ring players who dip their toes into it will bounce hard, you know.
Yeah. Because it's not like an exploration game. It's a level run game, so which is also kind of cool.
Congratulations to Miyazaki. Now get back to the Elden Ring mine.
Where's the DLC that we were promised?
Okay, more games. Speedrun. Yeah. Sea of Stars. I played just a little bit of this to get like a sense of the core mechanics.
Yeah.
You've played a little bit more.
Yes.
I think this game to me seems really, really promising, and this is one that I really want to try to play before the year's out.
Same. Did you ever play The Messenger?
I did not, no.
I really like The Messenger. The Messenger was their love letter to Ninja Gaiden, basically. And they did like a whole 8-bit tribute. But then at a certain point...
It's a Sabotage studio, by the way.
Yeah, you do a like a time shift and the aesthetic becomes a 16-bit game.
I remember you talking about that, yeah.
It's a great game. The Messenger is an excellent game. And so when I realized this was the same studio, I got really excited because this is clearly their love letter to Chrono Trigger.
And again, for a game that we have talked about all the time on the podcast, and in fact, I was having a conversation about Chrono Trigger in I was going to say France, Montreal, with a coworker, because we were talking about, you know, best games of all time, and I was like, dude, it's wild. No one else has just ripped this off. And so I really hope that Sea of Stars is just ripping this off, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've gotten to like the overworld yet, but it's the same style where like, it's like the tiny chibi figures on the overworld map. And then you like, you know, reach a town and click into it. And then you go back in, like it's even the overworld map is a Chrono Trigger tribute. Yeah. I think the guy who does the music did some of the music on Chrono Trigger as well.
Awesome. Yeah. And it looks great. I mean, the art is really cool. The pixel art is great. I love the sort of, traversal system that they have, because you can jump over things, and there's sort of environmental puzzles that I think you don't often see in an RPG like this, which I think is really neat. I also think that the sort of basic mechanic that they teach you really early on is so easy to grok and understand why this is cool, right? So the basic idea being, sometimes enemies will trigger like a significant attack they're about to do and showcase an element. And you are challenged to do enough damage of that element to break them out of that very damaging maneuver that they have. So it's got a kind of like, you know, Pokemon grass type water type thing going on, you know, but it's time based. Even though the game is turn based, it creates a sense of urgency that I think is sometimes lacking out of a turn based game where enemies just sort of do the same thing over and over and over again, you know?
Yeah, it's a little bit of the kind of Super Mario RPG thing, and also the Chrono Trigger thing, where there were things in Chrono Trigger where, oh, this enemy is charging up their attack, but if you do a lightning attack, it'll dispel that charge. And, you know, they're just taking it further, which is cool, and they're doing it in a way that is artistically interesting. So I mean, knock on wood, I heard that the game is like closer to 20 hours than 50 hours. And I think it's like potentially feasible to actually see the whole thing, which is exciting to me as well.
That's encouraging. Yeah. I was going to play this on Game Pass, but I feel like I just need to buy it on another platform, maybe on Steam or something.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. What else have you been playing?
I played F-Zero 99.
This sounds very weird, but cool.
So it's in the Nintendo Battle Royale family of games, from the people who brought you Tetris 99 and Pac-Man 99 come F-Zero 99.
Let's just take everything and make it a battle royale.
I mean, it's just kind of I really don't have a lot of experience with the F-Zero games, just, you know, playing them here and there. But they're fast. I mean, I forget how fast that stuff looks and how crazy it looks in those Super Nintendo graphics. Like, just that style is very, it's a frenetic style. And then basically what they did is, instead of, you know, racing with however many opponents, there's 99 other F-Zero ships on the course at the same time. And you're both racing. And if you get knocked out, like if you lose all of your energy and your ship's health, that also knocks you out of the round. So it's kind of a destruction derby slash race at the same time.
Yeah, that seems, I saw some videos of it and it seemed kind of nutty, but cool.
It's a lot. I mean, I went through and played a few of the things and played one of the Grand Prix things. And I think it is super cool. And just like the thought experiment of how far could we push these classic games and still make them readable is a cool concept.
I also think there's always going to be something that's inherently exciting about beating 98 other people.
I know.
even if it's rare, right? Like, that's the battle royale. Like, I did it. You know, that feels really good.
Or if you're like me, yes, I was in the top 50. Sweet.
Progress, you know? Okay. Any other games you want to talk about before we jump into a little bit of news?
I will say, for folks that have been thinking about Pikmin, I highly, highly recommend Pikmin 4. I've been continuing to play it, and there's just so many smart things in that game. Just the more I play it, the more I really admire the way that they designed the progression and the gameplay loop of like the different types of missions and the different types of activities you do in the missions feed on each other really well. And there's a lot of different challenges, but all of them are basically opt-in challenges, where you can engage with it if you want, or maybe you don't want to, and that's fine, and you can keep making progression. Pikmin 4 is a super impressive game. It just gets more impressive as I play it. So if anyone is thinking about it, I highly recommend it.
Add it to the pile, baby. Yeah. 2023 glut of games that will never
It's just a bunch of Pikmin carrying games onto your pile. It's just like a little line of Pikmin tossing
games. If I could hire them to play and like give me a little debrief about how that went, you know, that'd be fine. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some news stuff. I want to briefly touch on State of Play, because there are two things that I thought were especially notable from my perspective. The first is, we got a Final Fantasy VII Rebirth release date.
Oh, and I did see announced this. Trailer. Yes.
Did you watch that?
Yes.
Man.
I didn't watch the trailer, but I saw the date and I got excited. Yeah.
So I think you should not watch the trailer just to like
That's
go
what I
blind.
Was thinking. Yeah.
But I gotta say, I think the trailer's fucking sweet. It's really effective. It showcases both things that you recognize and love about Final Fantasy VII and things that you're like, what? What is going on? And again, we left Final Fantasy at a place where it could literally go anywhere.
Yep.
And once again, I'm really, really excited for this game, because based upon this trailer, it goes where you think it's going to go, but also far afield from that, which is really cool. we see Cait Sith shows up.
Oh,
we see Yuffie in this. We see
She was
Vincent
in the
in
DLC
this.
That I played.
Vincent shows up.
Oh,
in this
man.
Trailer as
Excellent.
Well.
All of the weebs will love that one.
No Cid Highwind, though.
Oh, come on.
As I recall, though, I think you and I said that he could just be left out of the game, right? Like, I don't think Cid is an interesting character at all anyway, so.
But he's such a fan favorite. Like, you can't have a Final Fantasy without a Cid.
No one likes Cid. Just have him be, like, a background character.
Was he in the first part? Like, was he even referenced in the first part?
I don't think so. I don't recall him ever being referenced at all.
Interesting. It was such a big sequence. Like, that spaceship in Final Fantasy VII was such a big sequence. I just don't think they'll be able to get away with not having him.
Yeah, I think you're probably right based upon this trailer. Like, there are so clearly callbacks, right?
Yeah.
Vincent's appearance is a big one, right?
Yeah.
Yuffie showing up. Like, there's no way, right? These characters were optional. Functionally, you know, so
yeah,
sure, kissing them, I think, is a clear nod. It was also interesting because I recall having a conversation with you after Final Fantasy VII, the first one being, how weird is Kate Sith as a character, and what are they going to do with this? But it is fully voice acted, looks really cool.
Oh my god.
So who knows, man? Who knows? I'm very excited. February 29th is the release date of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, so we've got that to look forward to.
That's awesome.
The other trailer that I wanted to talk about is a game called Baby Steps. Did you watch this trailer?
What's his name?
Co-op Bennett guy. Foddy, baby.
Bennett Foddy. Is this a Bennett Foddy joint?
It is a Bennett Foddy joint.
Yeah.
The man who brought you Get Over It, Quap, GURP. It is another walking simulator. The trailer is hilarious. It's like this chubby dude in like a pajamas wakes up absolutely fucking wasted and has forgotten how to walk. And, you know, in classic fashion, in the Devolver Digital styling, we don't know much other than it's a hilarious take on a walking simulator.
Yeah.
But I will always adore Bennett Foddy's commitment to bringing attention to the way that your body works, you know, and your hands in playing games. Because kind of like how I was talking about Armored Core and Dark Souls, like at some point you're in the flow of it. And Bennett Foddy is committed to getting you out of the flow of it. Like he wants you to be in a place where you are overthinking it. You know, because there's something about tilting you and making you hyper aware of the position of your fingers.
Yes.
That I think is something that is unique to games. And I really love that, like, he's committed to it and the hilarity pays off. I loved Getting Over It. I played a good chunk of it. I don't think, you know, it never ascended to the highest heights, but I love the sort of meta awareness that that game had, the commentary on it, the sort of self-humor poking, making fun of himself, you know, is super cool. So I'm really excited that that made its way into the state of play.
I'm excited about this. I had heard about this. It's also just funny seeing the biggest budget version of his vision being realized.
Yeah. Like voice acted.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. Did they say a specific date, or is this still kind of a TBD?
Sometime next year. TBD.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think summer 2024 is what they listed. So we'll have a while, but
that makes sense.
Okay, moving on. Whew. Yeah. Microsoft, big leaks.
Telling you.
Can't keep it in.
You can't. I mean, you cybersecurity. You know, good infosec is very important, as Microsoft now knows.
You're an expert on this. We were theorycrafting before. This is just an uh-oh, right?
Like
someone accidentally made a document publicly accessible that showcased Xbox's plans for the Xbox, I think for the year, 2028 was how far they were looking at?
Yeah, I mean, there was kind of talk that their next console, the post-Series XS thing is 2028, they're thinking.
This is a console that finally has gotten rid of the what do you call it? The disc drive.
Yeah, the physical. I've already forgotten. Some sort of physical media.
Yeah, it's finally done. It looks a lot like a really big Alexa device. It's like a tube.
Well, and that's not even the 2028 one. That's the potential Series X refresh that they're considering.
Yeah, I gotta say actually. The more and more, and this is especially too recently when I've been playing on the Steam Deck, which, I'm loving the Steam Deck, but I'm finding that, especially for something like Lies of P, which is on Game Pass, I'd kind of rather play it on the console. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an Xbox.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man, maybe I should get one. And this kind of leak was like, hey, if I wait a little while, maybe I'll actually get a version of this that is a little bit cooler, right? It's got a larger... Yeah. I think it's a 2 terabyte drive, which, considering the size of video games these days, still feels a little bit small to me, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got better wireless tech, no disk drive, which is fine. I don't need it anyway. USB-C ports. Like, it seems like an interesting refresh and a significant one, considering we haven't really seen Nintendo or Sony take that same sort of drastic approach to redesigning what is their current gen systems.
Yeah. It's kind of fascinating to see all this stuff because clearly, I think a lot of this stuff is internal marketing stuff. Like, I don't think any of these slides and stuff, like, there's like terminology on them that make it seem like
it's not consumer facing.
It's a presentation to internal execs that's supposed to look good but still be kind of cheeky. So it's just kind of interesting to see what the internal culture is like over there, but also where they think they're going with this. And I mean, to me, it just speaks more to, you know, they're pretty confident that they're essentially set on the hardware for quite some time. I mean, 2028, and this Series X refresh is not a, it doesn't seem like there's a huge leap in hardware, you know, graphical fidelity powering hardware.
This would be a 2024 release, by the way, according to the leaked documents. So who actually knows? But that's next year.
Right. And that's another 4 years ahead of when they think they're going to put their next console out. So I think it just speaks more to Microsoft's commitment to the ecosystem versus just the actual hardware itself, where they want this to be a service seller. You know, they want this to, they want this to be a device that inspires people to stay on Game Pass. And I think that stuff about the controller is interesting as well. You know, they want to create a new Xbox controller, and the bullet that is most interesting to me is that there's a bullet that says direct to cloud, which was something we talked about with Stadia, if you remember, like the controller connected directly to the internet so that it theoretically had a lower latency when you're playing streamed games, which as someone who now plays more streamed games, I totally am up for that. I would buy this controller just to play Game Pass games on if it made a difference. Which is cool. But the fact that they're investing in that as a piece of a new controller just means that they're like more and more fully into, like, not only is Game Pass our future, but we actually think the cloud stuff is increasingly important, so much so that it'll be a selling point for the new controller generation that we want to release.
Yeah, totally agree. Sybil is the controller's name, by the way. Sybil.
How do you feel about this bullet point of quieter buttons?
I'm a man that likes a chunky sound on his buttons.
You like a click? You like a click on those face buttons?
I think at the end of the day, I like haptic feedback, right? Like, I want to feel the weight of it going down. It always weirds me out because, you know how the PlayStation 5 has, I don't know what the terminology is, but like differential feel on the button?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And some games, when you're hitting the right trigger or the left trigger, it's like buttery smooth and soft to a point where I feel it feels weird. It feels like it's broken because it goes down so fast. And other games on the other spectrum where when you click on it, it's so resistant to go down that it just it feels, I don't know, like I got gum in there or something, you know? So somewhere in between is what I'm looking for. But
I'm interested because it's funny because I didn't realize if anyone besides me thought about this, but this is like such a nuanced, annoying little opinion, but I love the Series controller. I love I actually think I prefer the latest Xbox controller to versus the DualSense, just in terms of how it feels. The face buttons, straight up, too loud. Like, I have one sitting on my desk right here. You hear this shit?
I have one. Let me.
This clicking. This clicking all over the place. I'm just pressing the A button and it's just like a clicking storm over here. I want a quieter one. I like a quiet button, and the DualSense has quiet buttons. And so, like, I'm all on board for the quiet buttons.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, cool. Well, new controller, new Xbox, we out here.
I mean, it's very, I don't know, like, all of this stuff. And then, of course, it just kind of makes you understand why some people are extremely paranoid about not writing anything down, because the other part of the leaks that came out was a bunch of emails and, you know, exec correspondence and stuff. And I think part of it is people generally speaking who are lucky enough to not have been in corporate America for a long time are naive in terms of any conversation about any sort of M&A, you know, or acquisition, anything, those conversations are happening 24/7. Mm-hmm. Even if they'll never happen. Like, of course Phil Spencer wants to buy Nintendo. Like, who doesn't want to buy Nintendo? I mean, like, the IP alone is crazy. Will it ever happen? Even Phil Spencer says, okay, maybe it will never happen, but we think this would be a killer acquisition. It's like, yeah, no duh. Like, people shouldn't be shocked about that, because all of those...
Shoot for the stars, Phil.
I mean, all those discussions constantly happen. And all of those executives are paid to theoretically come up with big, big, big picture strategies. And so it shouldn't be... I think this stuff is actually less surprising than people think it is. But I still find it very amusing to, like, see Phil Spencer use an emoji in an email, you know?
Mm. Yeah, sometimes you need to lighten the mood with a little emoji. Yeah.
I mean, his quote of, like, Nintendo's future, what did he say? I love this quote. It's just taking a long time for Nintendo to realize that their future exists off their own hardware. And then he wrote, a long time, ... smiley face. Like, it's like, yes, maybe in the grand scheme of the universe, it makes a lot of sense, you know?
Like, yeah. But like that, I mean, the heat death of the universe will come before Nintendo...
Well, especially in this context when they put out the Switch, where it's like there have been few consoles ever in the history of video games that have done better than the Switch. And most consoles that have done better than the Switch are also owned by Nintendo. So I get it. Like, I think he's not wrong. Like, I think they actually could make more money short term by licensing Mario, but they have no incentive to do so, because the Switch is just such a runaway hit. You know?
We've talked about it before, right? Like, at the end of the day, it always feels weird in circumstances like this, because it feels like Nintendo is just playing a different game. Like,
yes.
It's just a different sport entirely. Like,
yes.
It's easy to say, like, oh, well, eventually they're going to have to, you know, like, play ball. But they're over here, like, at a fucking water park, like, shooting each other with hoses and having a blast, you know? Like,
yes.
It does not seem imminent, you know?
Yeah. Anyway,
genuinely not in my lifetime. Like, no, I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. In the next 50 years, who knows?
It would be tough. I mean, it's just a different, they just have a fundamentally different approach. I don't know. Who knows? I guess the world is a weird place, but it just doesn't seem like Nintendo wants to turn their IPs into the type of platform that they could. Yeah. Maybe for better, maybe for worse, who knows? But Phil Spencer gets it. That doesn't mean that he doesn't believe that Nintendo should do it, and he's probably having those conversations with them all the time. But it's just funny to see the emails out there in the public.
Yeah, for sure. It's also interesting to see just where the priorities are. Like, there was the mention of Baldur's Gate 3 kind of being shunned a little bit, which I thought was kind of interesting. There's also rightfully a lot of concern that's popped up about game preservation because the lack of a disk drive and the Xbox refresh. We've talked about that extensively on the podcast before. Like, that ship has sailed. Like, that is the fate, and I think solutions have to be found elsewhere. But nevertheless, interesting that it's speeding towards that direction, you know, with the leak.
Totally, yeah. Cool. Well, anything else to? I mean, we got some games to play. Is what's happening? Because I mean, Spider-Man's coming up here. Like, there's other things coming out.
That's the crazy thing. It's genuinely like, do I even start Sea of Stars? Do I even start some of these games? Like, Spider-Man comes out. Is it tomorrow?
I forget. It's like it's any day now. Like, my friendly neighborhood Spider-Man could be on my roof right now. Who knows? Like,
stop peeking in. He's like Santa Claus.
Hey,
he always knows what's going on.
I mean, there's Spider-Man's coming out soon. There's a bunch of other, like, smaller independent games that are getting a lot of buzz. You know, there's a Mario game that's coming out. Like, it'll be a race here.
Yeah. It was delayed, I think, right? So it's October now. Yeah, it's October.
Oh, okay. There we go.
So we got some time. Phew. But still, a lot of games coming out, a lot of games to play.
Yeah.
It continues to be a crazy year. So, yeah, let's get back to it.
Cool. All right, everyone. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can do us a favor, tell a friend about the podcast, and it would really help. Thanks.
All right, everyone. Appreciate it. And thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we